You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m, our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Otepoti, Dunedin.
Kia ora, you're listening to the R1 News at 1 on 91 FM. We'll be right back with you with the news bulletin. We're also lucky enough to have Watch the Haps and an interview with Jill Bond from New Zealand Kindergartens. Up now, you've got Slug Level Standards by Beatwix.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
Kia ora, this is the R1 News Bulletin for Friday the 27th of September. I'm Yana.
And I'm Amy. In local news, Dunedin Mayor is outraged over the news that the city's new hospital will be downgraded. A report commissioned by the government found that current plans for the hospital could not be delivered with the originally $1.88 billion budget and could balloon to $3 billion instead. Suggestions for decreasing the costs include cuts, delays, shelving spaces, or developing the old hospital site. Jules Radich, Dunedin's mayor, said that he was optimistic about their visit to Dunedin, but instead was outraged. He also stated that the announcement was a disservice to the Lower South Island, as the hospital was critical to the region. What they revealed today would amount to clinical cuts and a broken promise by the government. A rally to protest hospital cuts was already planned in Dunedin on Saturday, but it is now expected that it will double in size. Radich said, "I'd like to call on everyone who can make it to join the march and help send a clear and unequivocal message to the government. Deliver the hospital you promised, with no cuts to clinical services and facilities." Gore District Mayor Ben Bow said that the government's cost concerns were reasonable, as $3 billion was an unrealistic figure. He also stated that, at this stage, there are no cuts to the frontline services, which would be our main concern, and found that it is showing the importance of rural hospitals. Infrastructure Minister Chris Bishop said that the government was committed to building a new hospital, but that the latest costs were too high and the government couldn't justify spending up to $3 billion here, stating that it comes at the cost of potentially other investments in the wider region, but also other regional hospitals. Earlier this year, ministers asked for an independent review of the budget after receiving a further request of $290 million to cover costs in March. This review found uncertainty over the cost of the inpatient building and about $400 million extra dollars needed for a pathology lab, some refurbishing and car parks. When Health Minister Dr. Shane Reddy visited the site in June, he confirmed the government was committed to its election campaign pledge to restore previously cut beds, operating theatres and imaging services. However, has recently said that the promise was based on the best evidence the government had, but that information was flawed and he did not have the findings from the review, despite the report being delivered at the end of May. The government has told Health New Zealand it needs to stick to budget and provide urgent advice on two options to make that happen. These two options could include decreasing the size of the hospital, delaying fit-outs, or a staged development on the old hospital site. Tracy McClellan, Labour's Associate Health Spokesperson, has said that the cost was the cost and that the fat has already been cut out of the hospital already, and if we keep doing it, we won't have a hospital that's fit for the future or fit for the people. Dr. Deborah Powell, National Secretary for the New Zealand Resident Doctors Association, said that the health system's infrastructure across the whole of New Zealand is inadequate. She said that the country could not afford $3 billion for one hospital in Dunedin, where there would be more beds than counties Manukau for such a smaller population. She said that New Zealand needed to spend more on health if the country wanted to have the health system it aspired to. Many people of New Zealand, though, are unimpressed with these latest updates and are reflecting on the promises made by the national government during their campaigning. The South deserves a hospital that will be fit for purpose for generations, not a patch-up job. The previous national government committed to delivering the hospital that people in South needed, and we will follow through with that promise. National knows how to get things done, and it is past time to accelerate this painfully slow-moving project. These cuts do not reflect well on the current government, who are willing to spend $1.9 billion towards building a mega prison in the Waikato, and people are calling out Chris Bishop for saying the blunt truth. In national news, Associate Education Minister David Seymour says that there will be no more teacher-only days during term times, and that schools will need to implement a plan to tackle what he is calling the country's truancy crisis. This announcement came as the Ministry of Education released new attendance data showing a small increase from 47.1% in Term 2 of 2023 to 53.2% in Term 2 of 2024. Yesterday, Seymour announced a new policy called the Stepped Attendance Response Scheme, or STAR, which would be mandatory for all schools from the beginning of the school year in 2026. He stated that this policy would place obligations on the school and the parents to ensure their children were attending classes regularly. He provided examples as well about how the scheme could work. 5 days absent, the school would get in touch with parents or guardians to determine the reasons for absence and set expectations. 10 days absent, school leadership meets with the parents and guardians and the student to identify the barriers to attendance and develop plans to address this. 15 days absent, escalating the response to the ministry and steps to initiate prosecution of parents could be considered as a valid intervention. He stated that schools will have to play their part in setting a good example as well. This means not taking teacher-only days during term time. Today, he is urging parents and teachers to tell students not to attend today's climate strike, as it will count towards their new 15-day allowance for absences. He said that learning about science is more important than striking, and it could have waited. Seymour told the news he would urge teachers to mark students as having an unjustified absence if they attended the climate strike. He said, "I know some schools in the past have tried to say going on the school strike for climate is somehow a useful academic exercise, and this worried him, because students needed to be in class to learn the science that would improve their living standards." The strikes will take place across seven different cities today, starting at 12 in Otago, Wellington and Whanganui, 1 in Christchurch and Gisborne, 1:45 in New Plymouth and 3 p.m. in Auckland. Kiriama Allen, SS4C spokesperson, said that it motivated students more to strike, that it just goes to show that this government does not care about rangatahi's voice in Aotearoa. It shows that they have no intention to listen to us.
In international news, hidden amongst the vast holdings of Germany's Leipzig municipal libraries, a 12-minute piece of music composed by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart has been discovered. Researchers believe that the previously unknown composition, called Serenade in C, was written when he was a young teenager in the mid to late 1760s. Library researchers were compiling a new edition of the Kochelt catalogue, an extensive and comprehensive archive of Mozart's work, when they stumbled across a mysteriously bound manuscript, handwritten in brown ink. Whilst the composition is attributed to Wolfgang Mozart, the handwriting is not his, which suggests that the manuscript is a copy of the original. Researchers are able to identify that the piece is from his youth, as he only began adding Amadeo to his name around 1769. Serenade in C is a composition of 7 miniature movements for a string trio, 1 violin, 1 viola and 1 cello. Mozart was a child prodigy who, by the age of 5, was travelling around Europe performing for royals and aristocrats. By the time he fell ill at 35 and passed away, he had composed more than 600 works, and with some of his most enduring works being Requiem in D minor and The Marriage of Figaro. Serenade in C has been renamed to Ganz Klein Nachtmusik in the Kochel catalogue, and on September 19th, when the catalogue was unveiled, a string trio played the rediscovered work. This has been the
R1. Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
Up next on the radio, we have an interview with Jill Bond from New Zealand Kindergartens, but for now we have Road Retreat by Luckless. Kia ora, last week on the R1 News, we talked about the Ministry of Regulation's ongoing review of the early childhood education sector. Topics on the table include the end to pay parity and getting rid of the minimum teacher to child ratio. Major bodies in the sectors are at odds over what is needed. The Early Childhood Council, that represents private providers, are for these changes. Meanwhile, bodies such as New Zealand Kindergartens, the Educational Institute, Te Reo Mauhai, Early Childhood New Zealand and Kindergartens Aotearoa are critical to these changes. Calling for the current minimum teacher to child ratio to stay and made for one teacher to care for a small number of children and to keep pay parity. Saying that these changes risk driving down the quality of education for tamariki and pay for teachers overall. We are now joined by Jill Bond, the CEO of New Zealand Kindergartens, as a member-led organisation that represents 14 kindergartens associations, to talk about the MOR's review. Kia ora, Jill. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm good, thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. So we've just got a couple of questions for you about the MOR's review and the early childhood education changes. So what would New Zealand kindergartens like to see in the final outcome?
So thanks for the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon. This is a really topical and important issue that we're all grappling with. What we're looking for is a regulatory environment that protects and cares for children and educates children well in the environments in which they're participating, has sufficient checks and balances that make sense, but don't disrupt the ability for children to be children, to learn through play, to explore, to grow and develop with their peers.
Yeah, absolutely. And if the Ministry for Regulation were to implement the changes that the Early Childhood Council have put forward, what do you think the long-term effects on the early childhood education system would be? Like, how do you think these impacts are going to go?
Yeah. So at the heart of quality early childhood education is the quality of teachers and professionally trained teachers. And there is myriad of research and evidence that supports that. So within Aotearoa, we have a world-leading curriculum for early childhood education, Te Whariki, which is all about exploration, child-directed play, growth and development. So what we're advocating for is to strengthen the qualified teacher workforce over time, to look at the child-to-teacher ratio so that tamariki can really maximise the time with quality teachers, and to ensure that pay parity is part of the early childhood education environment, because a teacher is a teacher is a teacher, whether you're teaching in the compulsory sector or in early childhood education. So it's critical to employ and remunerate qualified teachers. The current government is focused really strongly on early childhood education supporting tamariki to be school ready. In our view, our curriculum is all about the growth and development of tamariki. And so what we're asking government to do is to truly recognise the importance of quality early childhood education and think about how it can invest early to enable us to do that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do you believe that there is a way to balance these costs while still maintaining the high quality?
Yeah, for sure. And that's why the regulatory review, the funding review, and the new learning needs for diverse learners review are all underway this year, because those three reviews are critical to lining up the government investment to support and deliver quality early childhood education and quality education in Aotearoa. I think the government has the aspiration for balancing the needs, balancing the costs, but we have to be absolutely ambitious for change to enable those things to truly make a difference for quality education in our country.
Yeah, absolutely. How would you say it's going to be ensured that the children's best interests at these early childhood education centres remain the priority and the top priority?
Well, that comes through two things. One is through our dedication to our curriculum, and the second is through our dedication to our quality teaching workforce. But just to put this in context, so in preparing our regulatory review submission, we got some information under the Official Information Act, and over the period 2022 to 2023, there were 1,862 incident reports submitted to the Ministry of Education as required by a current regulatory control. Of those 1,862 incident reports, only 50 of them were upheld as regulatory breaches. So you can see that there is a significant amount of time, energy, and resource that is taken away from quality teaching of our tamariki in the current regulatory environment. Just to add to that, another piece of analysis that we did is that we estimate that 54% of our head teacher time within a kindergarten is dedicated to child contact. The rest of their time is spent working through and on the regulatory requirements that are currently in place. So the balance is out, and what we need to do, as I said earlier, is find the balance where health and safety and the care of children is front and center, but that our qualified teachers are dedicated to educating our children in our services.
Sticking to the regulations and those requirements. Yeah, awesome. And are there any places outside of New Zealand that you think as a country we could look to for some inspiration of how to approach these early childhood education systems?
Well, we know that in some of the European countries, Norway, Sweden, Switzerland, that they invest really heavily in early childhood education and education generally. And they have been world leaders in terms of education development and eventual qualifications. Now, I don't think that our current environment is such that we have the ability to invest to that level, but there are certainly things that we can learn. And if we're ambitious enough for change, we could implement these things over time to lift and shift the way in which we value and invest in early childhood.
Absolutely. As what would you say New Zealand is like in comparison to places that are closer to home, like Australia? And
well, Australia is currently investing quite heavily in early childhood education. They have recognised the importance and the value of early childhood education. And we're looking with interest to see how that is evolving for them.
Awesome. And then kind of seeing if we can do something similar. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jill, for chatting to us today. We really appreciate you giving us a little bit more insight, and hopefully we'll be able to see how this whole thing develops and changes over time. It'll be very interesting to see how the different regulations and reviews go from here. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Up next for you guys, we have got Cowabunga Dude by Bad Hagrid.
Haggy sat around fire, we sat down on the bay.
Do you have no friends and no plans? Need something to fill your empty calendar? Find our upcoming events across Aotearoa Dunedin in the What's the Hats with Amy Martin, only on the R1 News at 1.
You got a boring week ahead of you? Do you want a break from assignments and library time? Never fear, there's plenty of events going on that you could get involved in, either with friends or attend by yourself and make friends along the way. Tonight, if you're feeling creative, there is a wine and design happening in the museum at 6 p.m. Making your own perfume might have always been a dream of yours, and now you can make it and your signature scent come true. For $99, you can create a scent that people will know as your own. But if you're looking for more of a boogie kind of night, then head over to Pecorino Bar at 10 p.m. for house night. The energy is sure to be pumping. If you happen to have some friends who are up for a good time and perhaps playing dress-up, then tomorrow at 10 a.m. head to 169 Princes Street for a pre-loved wedding extravaganza. I'm certain there will be plenty of bridal gowns, accessories or decor that you could use around your flat to spruce up the space. If you were listening in earlier, you would have heard the outrageous news at the hospital cuts about the hospital cuts that the government is planning for the new build. If this made you angry and you want to do something about it, then join the march on Saturday at 12. Tell your friends and make a statement. Remember, we're asking the government to deliver the hospital you promised. There are also a fair few things happening next week that we want to give you a heads up on so you can get ready if needed. There is a quiz night on Thursday the 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Everson Lounge of the Clubs and Socks building, a Charlie XCX release party next Friday at 10 p.m. in the Catacombs nightclub, and giving you that extra time to plan ahead, on the 16th of October at 8 p.m. in the Town Hall, Lime Cordial have made their way down south for a good time. Get in quick and buy those tickets while they're still here.
And if you end up with some free time from 3:30 to 5:30 this Sunday, I will be hosting a Sip and Paint charity event along with the rest of my group members from the Tour 304 paper. In collaboration with Art Club and the local charity group Life Matters, we will be painting mugs, having some nibbles and drinking some tea whilst listening to a spokesperson from Life Matters talk about their organisation's mission for suicide prevention in Te Puti and around Aotearoa. Tickets are $15, but we'll all be going towards a good cause. So come on down and channel your inner Bob Ross. We will fire the mug for you and you will have your very own keepsake to take home.
Make the most of the free time you guys have before exam season and stress kicks in. Step out into the sunshine, touch some grass, go for a walk, feed the ducks. Just try get out and do something different this weekend. Up next, we've got God by Merck.
You've been listening to R1 News at 1, here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts, or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
Kei te tautoko Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi ki Te Reo Māori.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.